So hello, everybody, and welcome to our NEPT open coaching call for December. And this is our last open coaching call for December. We may have one other call next week. I don't even remember. There's calls, but next week is my last week of calls for the year. And then I have a break for Christmas, and you all have a break for Christmas. And think of it as Christmas break for, you know, if you're in school, and gets you a chance to catch up and do all your fun stuff and have all that stuff. So the way these calls work is they're basically open, like whatever you want to ask about, whether it's your own personal health, whether it's the health of a particular client, a particular lab you're trying to understand, or, you know, a business type of a strategy type of thing, anything goes on these calls. And we oftentimes get into really great conversations. For those of you who have not been here before to one of these, we oftentimes just like, it leads into all different directions, and it's just, they're really good calls. So I'm excited to have you here. I do have open who is going to come and see if there's any other questions or stuff that you had. So Lynn, is Lynn here? Lynn Kulik. Jeannie, you helped your brother through some new issues, getting closer to finishing your home. You just mentioned that to us. Jill says her celebration is modules. That means what? That you're working through them. And Shelly says, I'm doing well on the fast. Yay. I'm about to finish module 3 test. Awesome. Because module 3 is one of my favorite modules of all. That's the blood, history taking. I'm wondering what comes to mind as biggest influences metabolically with migraine sufferers. You know, there's a lot of those. We can talk about some of that. Kathy, almost done with module 4. Holy cow. You guys are amazing. These guys just joined at Shine. So not even a month ago. And they're like, just going right through. How are we certified the end? Yeah. So great. So there's at the end of the first level, which is level 1. It's different than when a lot of you joined. So things have shifted because we're moving to a new site, and it's more modular or unit wise versus individual modules. But every single module, like you found, has a test, a comprehensive test at the end. And then the last module will take you probably a little longer because it's the insulin resistance module. And that has individual modules within that module. And each of those has a test. And then at the end of level 1, we have just finished working it out. We're going to have it posted hopefully soon. I keep my fingers crossed that the team gets to that. But we worked out the individual, what do you need to do to show that you have competency over everything in level 1. And it's a case. There's some labs related to insulin resistance, which you'll learn there, not related to everything because you don't get to that for a little bit. And then there's a case, all the exams. Yeah, and I think that's it. So you're going to record something. You're going to record a piece of a case, like you doing an interview with somebody to show us, and we give you a template that's based on module 3. And you can do it with a real life client. You can do it with a family member. You can find somebody in the group that wants to buddy up with you, and you can do it with each other. So whatever works for you. And that's it. And then you get level 1 certification, and you move on to level 2, and then on and on. And each level will have its own set of requirements for certification. Right. So it's a couple, like Isabel's been through the whole certification. She graduated last year, and that was just with the not the 36 modules, but it was different because it was like there's no like spots along the way that you go, okay, I completed this. Yay, I got a certification. Let's go to the next one. So it was a little bit different when she did it, but it's still a lot of work. But it's also, you've got to prove yourself that you can do this, because I don't want you to come out of this program and say, oh, I'm a certified in nutritional endocrinology, and people talk to you and go, like, what did you learn? Right? You have to be able to really have a competency level that you can demonstrate. And I want to do that with you and see that you demonstrate that competency level. So it's for you as well as us. Does that answer your question? And then Shelly wanted to talk about metabolic stuff with migraines. And there are so many, right? There's just so much in the metabolism of migraines. And we'll look at some of that within the neurological stuff and some of that within some of the testing, but you could have food allergies, right? That trigger it. You can have neurotransmitter imbalances. Serotonin's a biggie, and some of the drugs are targeted towards serotonin. And it could be gut imbalances. Like there's so many things. It could be environmental, it could be EMFs. So it's really, that's why this whole program is like helping you to take it step by step by step by step and not leave any stones unturned, because migraines could be histamine problems. It could be salicylate problems, right? You've probably heard all of this stuff before. Level two has only three modules, but they're all like gangbuster modules. One is on macronutrients, one is on the micronutrients. It's probably about 30 hours worth of videos and all kinds of good stuff in there. And then the other one is on the food principles. So it's basically all the different, I call them the food religions. So low salicylate diet, low oxalate diet, FODMAPs, etc. And how do you understand what the criteria would be to determine if somebody needs that? And, you know, good old elimination diet. We're going to be doing an elimination diet as a group with the ERC and the Empowered Self-Care, which you're invited to join us for. I'm going to start it in December. I got booed when I said we were going to do it between Thanksgiving and Christmas. And I was like, I don't want to do it then. So I'm going to give you the prep parts, like different forms, and you'll get to see what I use to help determine if somebody is a candidate for elimination diet. And quite frankly, most people are. Because usually some sort of food is triggering a reaction. And so then in January, we'll actually go through the actual pieces of that. We'll actually go through it together. So you're welcome to join that because, well, you had elimination diet. What chapter was that in? I think it was module five. So some of you haven't gotten there yet. I think it's module five is the one on, where's Ronnie? You know.
Six is digestion. Unless all that changed.
Yeah, that's different. You're in a totally different system. But in the news section, I think it's five or six is the elimination diet where you.
Sorry about that.
Yeah.
Well, I do have. Can I ask a question? Because I'm trying to finish up that digestion, and I was trying to figure out what it is I'm supposed to do on the case history interviews. And the case study write-ups, those are the same people, right?
Yeah, you can do the same people.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then do you keep up with the hours that you're spending to work with that? Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, that's probably just a good process just in terms of
it's a good process anyway, right? You want to keep notes and yeah.
And then of course when you start at being able to charge people, it kind of helps you know. And then okay, so all the instructions are in there. And then I have three people that are likely to work with me, but what I'm worried about is they're not going to cooperate. I mean, people are nice and saying, I know you laugh.
I know I laugh because, you know, I've gotten to the point where ain't going to cooperate, ain't going to work with you. My criteria. I will explain. Here's what I do. And it takes involvement, ready and willing assessment, pull it out, go back to the case history, have them fill out the ready and willing assessment and say, look, I'm willing to work with you and give you either a special rate or free or whatever you're going to do so that I can complete this for my case study. But here's the deal. I will only do it if you're ready and willing to do it. So if you'll fill this out for me, and if they're not willing to change their diet, they're not willing to take supplements, or they're not willing to exercise, they're not willing to do the kind of things you're going to ask them to do, you're setting yourself up for failure with them. So why take them on?
Okay. Right?
You can't convince them if they want this. And that's, it's not just like throwing it out. Well, it's really learning. I think the biggest thing you guys can learn is how to help people make that decision. Like, I want that. Yes, I want that. I want that result. Right. And you get to be explaining it to them and explaining how their daily actions are interfering with that result and how they can get it. That's gold. Right. So if you're at the point where you're thinking they're not going to be cooperating, don't take them on because it's going to set you up for failure.
So that first interview really needs to be beyond once we get beyond that.
So you do that first interview, right? And as part of that, you know, you don't have to give them the willing, you know, look at the ready and willing questions. So how willing are you to change your diet? I would always ask it as part of the intake. I'd say, how willing are you if your life depended on it? Are there any foods that you would not give up? If your life depended on it, are there any foods you're not willing to do? Are there any activities, actions you're not willing to do if your life depended on it? And if they say, yeah, I'm not willing to give up chocolate, or I'm not willing to give up dairy, or I'm not willing, like based on the history you just told me, if you don't give up gluten, you're going to continue to have this irritable bowel, and it could conceivably lead to ulcerative colitis, Crohn's, or even cancer. So if you knew that if you continued to eat this, your bread, and you knew that that was going to lead to cancer, would you continue to eat the bread? Right. So you actually take them on that journey of what is the cost of inaction? What's going to happen? What's potentially going to happen to them if they don't do this? Somebody has this ridiculous blood sugar, right? They have a family history of diabetes. Their blood sugar fasting is 110, and they're not willing to give up candy and carbs and that kind of stuff and do a 30-day metabolic reset. You can't help them. You send them to the doctor for medications and pray. That's basically what you have to offer them, right? So it's really learning and feeling confident in your what you can do with them. That if they cooperate, I mean, I'm seeing this now. These people, those of you doing the fasting while feasting, are you seeing some of the results people are getting on 3 days of being off of gluten and sugar and eating this great food? 3 days, right? Imagine what you could do with them and working with them in a 3-month program. Imagine the results they could get. And that you have, your job is to get them excited about that. And that's when they want to work with you. Does that make sense? Is everybody?
Thank you.
And when you're first starting, that's a hard thing to do because you're like, I just want a client. I just want to keep my practice alive. But you get to the point where I'll literally say, you know, based on what you're telling me, I think there's a lot that we could do to improve your health. But if you're not willing to do the work, I can't help you. And I can refer you to an MD down the corner who will give you some drugs to mask your symptoms, but it's not going to really get you to the root cause. And it's your choice. It's your choice. Right? And think through what prompted you to want to make these lifestyle and diet changes and be dedicated to it. And how can you help people? You're not trying to strong arm them. You're not trying to convince them. You're trying to influence. There's influence is very different than, you know, convincing, right? Convincing them is trying to like go against what they want, but influencing and helping them to really understand is really important. Thank you.
Thank you.
Who else has questions or comments or observations? Yeah, Isabel. She always has a good lab, right? You have a good
lab. I do. I'm doing the fasting while feasting. So I have a couple questions on that. One is last night I measured my ketone was at 1. Mm-hmm. And this morning I thought I would be higher, but I'm actually, no.
It typically, I find that because I can test it a lot. It's generally going to be the highest at night and overnight. And my explanation is probably that you're burning some of those ketones as fuel to do your nighttime, you know, detox liver, et cetera, et cetera. So I found that. So last night my ketones were 1.2 when I went to bed. It was 1.0 when I got up. And then I went running. You know, I had a busy day, and then I went running, and afterwards it was 1.9.
Okay. So, yeah. This was after I exercised. So I was like, darn, how come?
Well, if it was after you exercised, usually, I bet if I measured it before I exercised, it would have been like in the 2s, but I used some of that as fuel, right? Some of the ketones are being used to burn for fuel. Mm-hmm. So play with it, you know, until you really have done it on a regular basis, but it's not uncommon. I see that a lot. Don't get discouraged.
Okay.
You didn't go raid the refrigerator in the middle of the night and eat Cocoa Puffs or something.
No, I don't. My question is, let's say someone who is 200 pounds versus someone who's 100 pounds and they're on 600 calorie, are they going to be in the same fasting effect? Have the same effect?
Well, you know, if somebody's 100 pounds and they're not, they're not like 4'8" and 100 pounds is a good weight or even overweight for them, then they probably shouldn't be doing it. So if somebody's like a full size grown up and they're 100 pounds, you have to weigh whether it's worth doing it with them. Will they be in the same? I mean, everybody's going to be different. So everything like in terms of weight loss and in terms of calories, restriction in terms of glucose, in terms of ketones, all of that metabolism is going to be variable from person to person. But we still have them I mean, sure, the person that weighs 200 pounds, if they're 200 pounds and they're a brawny bodybuilder and a lot of it is muscle, they can have higher calorie and not have to, you know, and still get the same effects. But if they're 100 and they're 200 pounds and they're fat, you know, they're obese or they're overweight, over fat, then that's not, they don't need any more calories than the person who's 100 pounds.
Okay. Yeah. Cause I'm thinking like more for myself. I'm just a little bit over 100 pounds and I'm wondering if I'm getting the same benefit cause I eat pretty light. And I do fast from time to time. So I wonder if I need to do more or cut down the calorie a little more.
So you might want to cut down the, if you're used to, see, here's the thing. And I'm finding this with me. I think I've lowered my metabolic rate by doing like close to this kind of thing all the time, which is not a good thing to do, but I'm going through and going, huh, this isn't that much different than what I normally would eat for dinner. This is, and so I haven't been counting my calories normally. So I would say that, play with it, right? Instead of, cause the range is like 600 to 750, go towards the 600, you know, cut it down a little bit. If you want to have a more, if you typically eat 1100 calories a day.
Yeah. Like maybe 1400 and
14. So go to that percentage. Cause I gave you the percentage of like the first day is half. And then the second day would be like 35% or something like that.
Yeah. After lunch today, I was like, holy crap. I only have 100 calories to eat.
Yeah. I play with it and see how it goes for you. And you do it the first time. This is something you don't just do once. It's kind of like your cleanse, right? You just don't do once, and always it's the first time is a little, you're getting used to it, you see how your body responds, and then next time if you find I did fine with it, I lost 3 pounds and I felt great and my ketones went up, and you just keep to the same thing. There's no sense to torture yourself to do it.
Okay, that sounds good. Okay, so I do have a lab that I would like to get some of your opinion.
You want to share your screen?
So I'm going to share my screen. So this is one of our ERC member.
So those of you who are new, you get, you know, somebody asks, when do we get into the case studies in the labs? Well, every one of these calls generally, you're going to learn. And some of it might be a little bit like, whoa, what is that? I don't get it. And some of it might be exactly, how do we get this bigger?
Oh, is it bigger? No.
Let me get rid of this.
Let me see.
I'm just going to make mine bigger. I think it'll work.
Better?
Yeah, that's much better. Yeah, okay, that's better. Good. Yeah.
Okay.
So she's doing a Dutch test. Notice Isabel's a good student here. She took her marker and she blacked out their name, right? So that we're not sharing personal information about people.
Okay,
all right. So, but so we do know her age, which is, his age, 66 male. Okay, great.
Okay. So this person has prostate cancer.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so this is the Dutch test that the result. So basically the adrenal is pretty stage 2, stage 3. Between.
Yeah, 2 to 3, right.
2 to 3, okay.
And let me go back up a little. Let's compare, whenever we're looking at this, we wanna look at the free versus the metabolized. They're close, they're not that disparate. The metabolized is how much the body's producing and then eliminating, and the free is just that small fraction of it that we use to you know, get our energy and to have the actual physiologic effects. So these are close, so that's fine. DHA is a little on the low side compared to cortisol, at least compared to free cortisol. So we'll look for what other numbers we have in the metabolites of the sex hormones. Okay.
And for 66, and then it's within the range, right?
It's totally within the range, but it's more than, you know, we more than look at within the range. We want to look at ratios of things in comparison to each other. So like this is not that much different, but higher cortisol will knock down the DHEA. So you have to always be careful. If somebody has really low cortisol and they have low DHEA and you want to supplement with some DHEA, you have to be careful not to do too much, because it will suppress the cortisol even more. So there's just little nuances like that that we have to keep in mind.
Okay. And then from here, the testosterone is pretty along the lower side. Yeah,
it's definitely on the lower side. The estrogen's on the lower side. So, you know, but he's a male. So let's look at the metabolites. All right. So this is the metabolites. So DHEA gets converted to testosterone, and then the pregnenolone gets converted to DHEA. Pregnenolone gets converted into everything. So we have to look at, you know, that, but we have to be super careful with somebody with prostate cancer. And what the thing we want to really look at is the DHT, the five alpha version of that, to see if that's an issue. So the things I like to look at, especially with males, I look to see, and he's not in that state of excess aromatase where the testosterone is low because it's all getting converted to estrogen. And that's not the case here. He doesn't have high estrogens. Mm-hmm.
So the 5-alpha reductase activity is more to the beta, which is promotable pathway. But is it preferred to be more balanced, or
it's preferred to be more balanced? With somebody with prostate cancer, I would be looking, and he doesn't have that. He doesn't have the high alpha, which would create DHT, which is dihydrotestosterone, and that's a really potent form of testosterone that's associated with male pattern baldness and prostate cancer. So he doesn't have that as a risk factor.
Okay.
So that's a good thing. Estrogens. And I'm not 100% sure if the estrogen quotient applies to males as well as females, like wanting to have the estriol higher. I would almost guess it in this particular case, just because of having the cancer, that estriol is a anti-proliferative, it's a protective form of estrogen. But with females, we'd be looking to see if the E1 plus E2 is less than or equal to E3. In this case, it's obviously not. It's like three times as much.
So the estrone was a bit higher?
Estrone is a little higher, and that is the most potent, right?
Yeah.
And so I'm not sure 100% if there's issues with men. I know DHT is a risk factor. I'm going to see if let's see. Yeah. Here's a study, the role of estrogens in prostate cancer. And his isn't off the charts, but it's out of balance with the estriol. The role of estrogens. There are some estrogen dependent prostate cancers. And I would say, you know, looking at a biopsy to see what the biopsy is saying, whether this is an estrogen dependent prostate cancer. Mm-hmm. I'll put the link here in the chat.
So do they all, when they do a biopsy, is it always that information's available if it's estrogen?
They usually say what kind of, you know, the different kinds of cancer, and if it's an estrogen sensitive, I think they would. This is a very long article, and I'm trying to see if there's any, like, anything related. Main points, observation, increasing circulating estrogens may elevate prostate risk and act through the estrogen receptor, strongly supported by the findings that estrogens enhance androgen-induced prostate cancer in an animal model. Evidence from animal studies suggests that estrogens have genotoxic activity in the rat prostate. So this is all rat data, but you never could be applied to humans. Induction of estradiol plus testosterone. There is present no human data to support this. Anti-estrogens may have therapeutic. Now, so that's, let me look back at his numbers. So there is some issue. He's not really high in the estrogen, the E1. You go back to the third page.
Oh, okay.
He's not super high in it, but it is higher comparatively. Mm-hmm. So this might be involved. I would say get the report, the biopsy report, if there is one, and see what it says. I would look down here as well, because you see he's got 4OH. He's got a lot of the 2OH, which is protective. So that's very good.
Mm-hmm.
He's not methylating. He's very low methylator. So methylation support might be a good thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
I'd look at the genetics too, to see what that supports, but yeah, because the 2 is in a very healthy range. For females anyway, the low, let me see if the ratios are different. It's at 86 and the range is, yeah, 7.5 to 13 for 4, and he's below that. And it's 6.9. Oh, so this is different for, yeah, he's low in the 16. Yeah, so in the 16. You know, and men can get osteoporosis as well. So low 16, as you know, is a risk factor for osteoporosis in females anyway. I don't know what the data supports in men, but high nutrient density in the minerals and all that in the diet, nettles and horsetail. And
you could do a DEX scan to confirm.
Yeah. Yeah. But looking at these numbers, yeah. So usually this beta, I think the first time we discovered this was in one of your patients where the beta was high versus, and it, I think it was a female, but it was, we were concerned about liver. When we did some research, it looked like there, it could be fatty liver or some liver stress with the high beta. The other thing you can look at, scroll down, I'll show you the picture. Scroll down to the next page. Okay, in the next page, let me see here, cortisone. Yeah, the cortisone's super low, which I would have them closer to a stage 3 than a 2, okay, because the cortisone, the storage form is much lower. Okay, so keep going. And okay, yeah, I want to see some of these within. He may have low glutathione, and that's super important antioxidant, especially in a cancer situation. And possibly having sleep issues if the melatonin mm-hmm. being low,
yeah.
Right? And melatonin, yeah, I think we were having a conversation about this on the last call, that with melatonin, maybe it was somebody else, but with melatonin being low, or low end of normal, this is below normal, and it's such a great cancer fighter in some cases, especially in estrogen dependent cancers, if that's what he has. So mm-hmm. supplementing with melatonin might be very helpful.
Yeah, okay, so that's recommended. So I'll double check if that's been started.
Okay, good. Yeah, and so, you know, possibly some glutathione, although I would go slow with glutathione, because until you see his genes and you see where some of the backups might be, if you take too much glutathione, it backs up the sulfur and then it goes down some other pathways that can cause sulfur overload symptoms. And it can also suppress the production of your own glutathione. So I would usually go with like a liposomal. I know Seeking Health has a really good one. I would go with the liposomal and then just go little by little drops, small drops, and just make sure that there's no aggravation of any kind of symptoms, any achiness, any stuff that might indicate that there's some liver detox overload or sulfur overload, which could be headaches. It could be, you know, any of those achiness things like that. Yeah. So, you know, it's not... because you can't go backwards a little bit to the estrogen page, the estrogen testosterone. I'd want to do a little bit more research to see if there's any contraindications to estriol in prostate cancer, because the article, did I put that link in the chat? Let me put the link in the chat. Where's the chat? Let's see if I got it. Why am I not seeing the chat? There it is. Yeah. Okay. Is that it? No, that's not it. Let me go back. I have this issue. Let's see if this still works. Okay, yeah, here we go. I'll put this in the chat. And I'd want to look to see that they're specifically talking estradiol. His estradiol isn't terribly, oh no, yeah, his estrone is, but his estradiol isn't. His estrone is a little high. So I haven't read this fully. You know, you saw how little time I spent on it, but to look to see the links between the different kinds of estrogen to see, and to see if there's any research supporting using estriol as a supplement in somebody with prostate cancer to help combat the other estrogens. And again, it depends on whether or not he has a prostate that's
estrogen
sensitive. Yeah.
So this person, he's going to have surgery to remove prostate next month.
Okay. Yeah.
And so would you recommend doing a PSA test prior to?
You could do a PSA before and after to see what the difference is. I don't know. I'd have to look up to see the specifics of what's expected to be the change in that before and after. Has his doctor recommended that?
I don't know. That's what I was just thinking that it would be.
Yeah. Yeah. And the other thing with the estriol, if that is a good idea to supplement, that would help push up this 16-hydroxy, which would help, you know, protect bones. But in the meantime, whenever I see a low 16-hydroxy, I just put them on bone support type things. You can't hurt putting somebody on nettles in general unless they have an allergy to it. And that's really super powerful for that.
So the nettle, the bone support, horse tail.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And those are easy enough to just add to a smoothie or a soup, or I grind them up and keep them in like a salt shaker type of thing. And I'll just sprinkle it on whatever I can sprinkle it on.
Sorry, what do you sprinkle on?
Oh, nettles.
Okay.
You can get it as the leaf, the sifted, cut and sifted leaf from say someplace like Mountain Rose Herbs. Mm-hmm. And then what I do is some of that I just put in, but it really, I find it works really easily if I grind it up in the dry Vitamix container, and then I put it in the salt shaker type of thing, and I keep it in handy. And when I'm making recipes, it doesn't have barely any taste to it. So it's not like it messes up with your recipe. So I just put it in sauces and soups and smoothies and things like that.
Is that stinging nettles or?
Yeah, it is actually.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, people can actually eat stinging nettles in the raw state. You just have to grind it up. You have to wear gloves to pick it,
yeah.
Put it in the blender, grind it up really well. And then, you know, test it to see if it doesn't burn. But I know lots of people who put them in their smoothies and things like that. Yeah. And once it's ground and dried,
okay,
it doesn't have any stinging properties left.
No. When you grind it, the acid from the nettle part balances with the alkaline from the juice and takes away the sting.
There you go. That's a good reason. Thank you.
It can be drying as well, though. So it's one thing to pay attention to if you use it regularly.
Drying for the body, you mean like astringent type of drying?
Yeah, especially in like postmenopausal women.
Yeah.
I've had a few women go, wow, this is really drying. But I think you have to take a significant amount of it.
And usually what I recommend is when people do it, they do it in like a very liquidy, like a smoothie or a soup or something, so that they're, you know, they're balancing some of that. But yeah, that's something to watch for.
It's great when you have a cold and you're trying to dry out.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
It's what is the difference? Sinuses.
Yep.
Sorry. What's the difference between an organic acid test and the Dutch test?
Big difference. So the Dutch test, scroll down to the organic acid page in here. The Dutch test does include some of the organic acids, but it's testing your adrenals and all your steroid hormones and all the metabolites. And it does include this list. It's only like 8 or 10 different organic acids. The organic acid has all of these plus a whole lot more mitochondrial function and oxalates and gut dysbiosis markers and a whole lot of other stuff besides.
And when do you use which test? When do you recommend?
Yeah, it depends on what's going on for a person. So if there's hormonal stuff, if I'm suspecting that their adrenals are out of balance one way or the other, high or low, and then I would do a Dutch test and then I'd start with a few of these organic acids. If I'm more suspicious, I think most of the time I start with a Dutch test unless it's just, you know, it doesn't make sense because most people do have some level of adrenal fatigue. But if somebody has really a lot of gut dysbiosis symptoms and
time or, 1 hour, whoops. Distance 3.4 miles.
It was
17 minutes.
How funny.
53 seconds per mile. Split pace 18 minutes. Sorry. 33 seconds.
Can't get it to shut up. I apparently didn't turn it off when I finished my run. So it's been continuing to time me. So that was a very long run for a very short distance, like 3 hours of 3.5 miles. Anyway, yeah, so I usually base on what's going on for them. In menopausal women, you know, or who are having hot flashes or other symptoms, or somebody with hormonal stuff, I definitely go with the Dutch. Sometimes I'll do this both at the same time, but sometimes I time them so I can get a feel for which of the organic acids might be out of balance here, and then we can address them. And then we would do a Dutch maybe 6 weeks later. Sometimes I do organic acids. Sometimes I do an organic acids and a stool test at the same time, because the stool test will actually look microscopically at what actual organisms might be there. Whereas the Dutch test will give me a rundown of what toxins those guys are producing, what organic acids as part of their processing. I'm a big fan of doing the least amount of testing as I can to get the information that I need. So it depends. And we go through all of this in the modules on testing, like when and what's the criteria and all that. But I like to, sometimes I'll have somebody do, if we're really struggling with like, I don't know what's going on with this person and they're doing all the right things, then I'll do an organic acid and a stool test at the same time. So I can see if the organic acid shows some byproducts of the organisms, what are those organisms? But here's the deal. Sometimes there are low enough levels or the stool test isn't as accurate as it could be, and it may miss that there's some stuff. So if the organic acid test says, oh, there's these toxins produced by, you know, bacteria or yeasts or clostridia, and I don't see that in the stool, I'm still going to address it because it's in the organic acid.
Oh, okay.
And what stool test are you talking about?
For stool test, usually I'll do, I've been using the doctor's data for years. Lisa's trying to convince me that I should use the Genova, and we're doing that with our ERC people, the GIFX. So I'm getting used to it. And you know, when you get used to the format of something and the layout of something, and I was like, oh, it's so different with a GIFX. I mean, it's the same kind of data, but one or the other of those. The thing about the GIFX in the standard test includes PCR, which is genetic. They're looking at the genetic codes for the different organisms. And the doctor's data now has a new one called the doctor's data 365. And that includes the genetics as well. So I haven't run the 365 yet. I've done hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of the doctor's data.
What about the Zoom? Aren't those?
I haven't started to use the Zoomers yet. Right. And so I think one person is all that had one done and came. So I need to start doing more of those to see how I feel about those comparatively.
They're actually pretty similar. They just have their data organized in a different way. There's something, I looked at the GI effect again today, and it breaks down into like inflammation, gut dysbiosis. There's like four different areas that break down to, and then it has a different recommendation, which I thought was kind of neat. It's pretty neat. And Zoomer does about the same thing, but in a different way. But depending on the organism that they found, it gives you a preview of, or it assess the risk of different SIBO,
the risk
or
of cardiovascular different kinds of, yeah.
And all that.
Yeah. The thing about the reason I've loved doctor's data for all these years is that it gives you the very simple, they run the, what's the thing, sensitivity against each one. So they have like four or five different herbs that they'll run against it. And I don't know that I haven't seen that consistently in the GI effects.
Yeah, that I don't know. I know Zoomer doesn't have that. Yeah. I asked and they said probably not anytime soon that they don't have that.
Yeah. And yeah. I like that. I mean, because if there's a weird Klebsiella strain or whatever, and they then run the sensitivity, then they'll give you a list of different herbs and antibiotics as well that are good for that and not. And what I find is that the stuff that we typically tend to use a lot that people know about because they've heard about it on summits and whatnot, like oregano and Oregon grapefruit and colloidal silver and all that, a lot of times what I find is that people have been just prophylactically taking that stuff and they're no longer sensitive to it. And it might be that they never were, but if you want to know that if you're going to give somebody something to take for their particular condition, that it's actually going to work to get rid of it. And that's why I like the doctor's data, because it does that. It doesn't always do it on the commensals. That's the other reason I like the doctor's data. I like the way it's formatted in that it shows you what's our normal flora and how much of it. And it gives it to you in a number that makes sense to me, which is on a 0 to 4 scale, where 4 is high growth and 0 is no growth, or it'll say NG. Then you can tell how's the normal flora, and then they'll have commensals, which are things that will overgrow when you don't have the right balance of your good flora. And then there's the ones that are obviously pathogens. And I wish they would do the growth on the sensitivities on the commensals, because I think sometimes I want to address them, but sometimes when I see commensals, it's like, well, if the commensals are there and they're elevated, but the good stuff is in a normal range, then I'm going to want to address those commensals directly and with some sort of antimicrobial herb. But if their normals are way out of whack, then instead of right away trying to kill off the commensals, I want to get their good stuff in balance. So that's the kind of thinking that I do when I go through the doctor's data. And I just need to do more of the others to see if I can get the data I really want out of those as well.
So I think I'm hearing that if I have a really messed up gut, which I do actually, yeah. And I'm not sure why, I think it's toxins, but I'm trying to figure it out. It sounds like the doctor's data would be a better test.
I would do the doctor's data with the 365. So you also get some additional information that has the latest technology with the genetic markers as well, the DNA markers. And there's no difference in price. Okay. I think if there is, it's only
great. And then do I just do that at your website, or is that something I should become a provider of as a student?
Doctor's data, I don't think lets us do provide, do they? I can't remember, Isabel. Are you able to order direct from Doctor's data?
No, I can't. I sometimes go through direct lab.
Okay, direct so you labs, can go through direct labs. Okay, you can get the regular doctor's data, but we haven't yet updated our site to put the others on. Here's the deal with our offer, our pages that where you can order tests. We don't mark the tests up other than like $10 or $20. And the amount of work, it used to be Scott would do it, my husband, and I didn't have to pay him to order the tests. And there is a lot of overhead. When the test gets ordered, we have to actually manually put the order in, either calling them some labs or putting it in on the site. And so I was like, yeah, we don't, we'll just do this as a service. And now it's like, oh, we don't want more people to do these because we're losing money on every test. So we either have to revamp our tests or limit the ones we do. So we haven't been excited about adding new ones until we figure that part out. But for some of the labs allow you to order direct. Like one of them that's no longer in existence, BioHealth, allowed you to set up your own account there. This test, the Dutch test, you can order direct. They'll let you set up your own account with Precision Analytics. Usually what they do is you have to apply to get the account, tell them that you're an NEPT, and then we will approve you. We're kind of cautious about approving you unless you've been active, coming to calls, that we feel like you can be trusted to analyze them right, and that you say, look, I'm going to get this test done and I'm going to come to a call to help you, get me to help you interpret it, at least at the beginning. Because if not, then I'm kind of on the line, right? If you screw up and there's some really bad thing in there and you don't catch it and, identify that and allow somebody to know that, then it's under my license. So we're careful. Like, you guys are all here. You come to calls. I mean, some of you just joined. Some of you are always here. Some of you have been in for a while, I know. And some of you are just joined. And, you know, I may not say like Shelley or Kathy are, you know, yeah, set up your account unless you're promising me that you're going to not analyze it with somebody unless you've come to a call first to get help with that, right? Whereas like, I think, you know, Carrie, you've been around for about a year. You might've seen enough of these that you're still going to want to have help. Even, you know, Isabel's graduated and she's, it always helps to hear somebody's opinion. Now, some of these, like, I don't know if they still do this at Great Plains. Great Plains lets you order it direct for the organic acids. And they used to just get on the phone. One of their consultants would get on the phone with you for a half an hour and explain the test. So it's just a really nice service that you get from them. Meridian Valley, who I don't think you can order directly from, we'd have to order for. I used to do them before Dutch came out. It's a 24-hour urine that gives similar things, but not everything from the Dutch. And that's how I learned these tests. I'd never done these tests before. It was about 8 years ago. And I'm like, oh, let me call them up. They said they'll give a free consult. And every single time, even if I really got it, I would go on the phone with them because I'd learn, is there going to be a new nuance that I'm going to learn? So
Precision Analytics is doing that now as well.
Who's doing that?
Precision Analytics.
Oh, where they give you a consult? Oh, cool. Mm-hmm. All right. I love it. I thought they just did that on the first one, but if they continue to do it, that's awesome. And the thing about Precision, they used to have, I don't know if they still do, when you first set up your account with them, they'll let you buy 5 tests at half the practitioner price. So I got 5 tests for $125, 5 test kits. So you have to prepay it, but then you sell them to your clients at the price that they're supposed to be. So
my question is then, you're the ordering physician. I wonder if I could make an appointment with them and have a consultation with them and how that would work.
You can try.
You can try.
Yeah. Okay. I think, you know, if Carrie said they did it and mm-hmm. others have, yeah, give them a try.
I just ordered my first 5. And so I'm about to do a consult with them.
Great. And you ordered it and it was $125 each or something like that?
Yeah.
Well worth it, guys. Well worth it. You know, set up your account, get all 5 because you can use them for your family members, but you can also sell them to your clients. And if they go to their Precision Analytics site, it's going to be like $375 or $400 or $420 or something like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So basically to wrap up for this client, then address adrenal fatigue, stage 3, find out if it's a estrogen sensitive prostate. And I guess more research on bone health.
I would say it's not going to really hurt unless there's some, I don't know that any of those are estrogenic. In fact, nettles is actually an aromatase inhibitor, so it would reduce the aromatase and bring up the testosterone. But if it's a testosterone sensitive, mm-hmm. which here doesn't seem like it would be, because it's usually would be DHT that would be elevated.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then for the adrenal stuff, you know, I would say address it the way you normally address adrenal stuff. Just be careful of making sure that none of your herbs are going to be, you know, estrogen, phytoestrogens or anything.
Okay.
Which I think you're going to be fine. The vitamin C and the glutathione.
Yeah.
Glutathione. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the melatonin you said you already recommended to him.
Yeah.
Okay.
Dr. Rita Marie.
Yeah.
I have quite a few clients who are breast cancer survivors. So would you, do you think the Dutch test is a good one for them to see where their estriol is, and, you know?
Absolutely, because they're putting themselves at risk. And I would also look at their genetics to mm-hmm. see if they have like the CYP1B1, but 1A2, 1B1, those over there. And then look at their COMTs and then look at their, the BRCAs, right? So really looking to see, is there a genetic component to this cancer, or is it, you know, is it lifestyle? And then if you look at the different metabolites, like if their estrogens are high, like if they're, you know, 30s and 40s, right, and their estrogens are still in a higher range, and they're making a lot of the 4-hydroxyestrone, then things like cruciferous vegetables, broccoli sprout powder, things like that can help bring that down.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's a good idea. Especially, you know, if they're on tamoxifen or some other estrogen inhibitor, that's a good thing to be looking at and make sure they're safe with what they do.
So when you say broccoli sprout, is it like the gym or like a
Yeah, so broccoli sprouts, you can make the broccoli sprouts and eat them. A lot of people have trouble finding them. They don't want to sprout, but Z Natural Foods and a couple of others have organic broccoli sprout powder. So they basically made the broccoli sprouts and then they dehydrate them and they turn it into a powder. And it makes it easy for people to just add a scoop of that to various foods.
Who does?
Z Natural Foods.
Okay.
Yeah. Good.
Also, is this the right call? I'm an NEPT.
Yep.
So, yeah.
Yep. Okay. This is the NEPT, what do we call it? Open coaching. So anything you need, you ask here.
So yeah. I did have a question.
Sure.
I have a client who came to me for weight loss, but then across, you know, just after a couple of months, she kept complaining about diarrhea. She never brought it up initially. You know, we did the intake form and it just never came up. She kept saying her digestion was fine, but then all of a sudden it just became an issue. You know, that became more important to her.
Okay. And so is it that it was existing, but she just never mentioned it, or that it was there all along? And that's an important question.
Yeah. I did ask her that. And she said, yeah, I've always had it on and off. But you know, I was just so caught up about losing weight, I didn't really think it was important. And my intake form has some really extensive questions about digestion, and she never mentioned it. But anyway, she's I started her on L-glutamine. So we tried to see if she's kind of deficient in zinc, and I gave her some psyllium husk and different things. We've tried different things to see if there's anything that she is allergic to, but nothing has come up. And I'm just wondering if you have any suggestions that I could try with this.
Yeah. So you want to look at what's her microbiome like, you know, is she taking probiotics? Does she eat probiotic containing foods? And balancing microbiome is a little tricky because you don't always know what their constituents are. So if you do a stool test, you get a general idea, but you know, it tests for 5 or 6 normal flora when there's, you know, thousands of them really, right? Mm-hmm. So it's a matter of, you know, really looking at what is she eating that could be disrupting normal flora? Does she have a candida or a bacterial overgrowth in her gut? Does she have the right amount of bifidobacter? You know, when in doubt and you don't know what's going on and what the best ones are, bifidobacter is usually a safe bet. Then I would ask questions like, does she have bloating after she eats? Is there an indication of maybe a SIBO situation? Then you'd want to be careful about which probiotics you're going to supplement her with, because some of them can actually aggravate it. If she eats sauerkraut, does she get bloated? That could be a histamine intolerance. That could be a SIBO problem. So there's a lot of little things in there, and you'll get all this stuff in the digestion module, the digestive mastery module. But yeah, I would look at all those things. So here's what I would do if I were you. I would go into the Unstoppable Health site and go to the GRAND program, the gut repair program under the consumer side.
Okay.
And the step-by-step in there is a great option for you to go through. You're not going to get as much detail, obviously, as you will when you get into our digestive mastery here, but that's going to give you like, okay, first, we always start with digestion top to bottom. And a lot of times people are not chewing their food well. It's going on through them, right? They're eating under a lot of stress. They may have disruption in their stomach acid. They may have disruption in their digestive enzymes, their pancreatic enzymes, their bile. Does she have a gallbladder? Because people without a gallbladder oftentimes have diarrhea problems. People who are taking bile salts as one of their supplements can have problems with diarrhea. So you can see there's a lot of places. And I think if you go through that gut repair program, you're going to get a lot of insights as to how to do it. And the other thing I will caution all of you is with glutamine, be careful. Because if you don't know their genetics, make sure they're not a high anxiety type person. Because high anxiety type persons often, not all the time, but often have a problem with glutamine. It actually makes them more anxious. So you go slow, get a powdered glutamine, start with a teeny dose. Like, you know, who was it? Amy Yasko used to say, a pinch is a valid dose, right? Mm-hmm. A little pinch, a little bit more, a little bit more. And then you see if they start to get anxious and you warn them, hey, if you're on this and you start to get anxious, a small number of people will get anxious if they take too much glutamine. We want to find the just right quantity for you. Right. And then you explain that to them. And then, yeah, so glutamine can be great. But I had somebody came in that was on so much glutamine and she was a basket case. And she said she had been to this functional chiropractor. And he kept saying, muscle testing says you need more glutamine. And she go, but I took more. And this is how I felt. I took more. And he kept saying up and up. And she was on like 6,000 a day, which is a high dose of glutamine. Yeah. And
6,000 milligrams or.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a lot. And so she stopped. She said, forget it. She quit going to him. She stopped the good. I said, let's stop it and let's start up over again. The anxiety went away when she stopped the glutamine.
My client had a lot of bloating and smelly gas, all of that. Now with the glutamine, that really took care of it.
Great. You know,
she's just, and we went really slow on the glutamine.
Good. And, yeah.
But the last thing is the diarrhea. You know, that seems to be. I wonder if there's any sulfur allergies because she, from a ketogenic diet, now she's more plant-based. She's adding more fiber. I wonder if that's. But she said that she's always had.
She's always had it. Then I would suspect either enzymes or microbes, gut microbes, out of balance microbes. You can always do a stool test if she's open to doing it. You're in Canada, so I don't know how available those are for you, but usually you can find a functional. Although some of them will, I think Genova stopped. Is it Genova that stopped doing them across the border?
I'm in California. So.
Oh, you're in California. I don't know why I was thinking you were in. So you're good. You can get anything like that. So that might be a good next step for you is to run a stool test and see.
Okay.
Dr. Test is your stomach acid?
The Heidelberg test, which is a test that requires you to have this very expensive equipment and you have a person swallow a capsule that has an electrode, but it has a chip in it, a computer chip that goes through your system. And then when they poop it out, they have to fish it out of their poop, clean it off and bring it in. And then you check it on your thousands or tens of thousands of dollars of machines. So needless to say, it's not done very often. There's some other things that I've seen where they have like a piece of pH paper attached to a long string and they swallow the pH paper and it takes it and it pulls it back up. There's something in there that protects it from like disintegrating, I guess. But that's another one. We described that in the, I think it's the home testing. There's a booklet that describes all that. So there's not a great way to test it. So we usually test it indirectly. So you can do a challenge, a hydrochloric acid challenge, right? And you can have them start with a little bit of hydrochloric acid. Never, ever take the hydrochloric acid out of the capsule. This is important. They come in capsules. Some things you can open the capsule and just take a pinch. Don't do it with hydrochloric acid because it can burn the mouth, the esophagus, and not be good. Like the stomach can handle it. Because it makes it and it's got this thick old bushy mucous membrane, but the rest of the system can't. So you take one capsule, you have them observe really carefully whether it gets warm. Does it get warm? Not burning. If it gets warm, then it's too much. So if it gets warm, they get warmth in their stomach from one, then you don't have them take it at all. If they go to two and they get warmth, but they didn't on one, then one would be their dose. So, and you got to be very careful with doing that. That's one way. And then the symptoms. So module three with the history taking, there's a bunch of scorecards in there. And I would have her do the digestive scorecard to see which of those areas of her digestive tract might be out of balance. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. And then you can address that. And stomach acid, usually I'm not a big fan of HCL supplementation. I like to get the body to do it. So if you give the body something that it's supposed to be making, it turns it off. It's called the negative feedback loop. However, if they just can't make it because like the parietal cells are damaged and they can't make HCl anymore, then that's a time when you might want to be giving them HCl. But what I'd rather do is give them bitters, and bitters stimulate a reflex under the tongue that stimulates all the digestive juices to increase. It stimulates your gallbladder to produce or release more bile. It stimulates the pancreas. It stimulates the stomach to produce more stomach acid. But if they have a zinc deficiency, then you give them this bitters, there's not enough zinc to make the HCl. So zinc is required to make the HCl. And here's the trick. The zinc is also required, the HCl is required to absorb the zinc. So you get into this cycle that you have to break, right? You have to look at, okay, so I usually give them the bitters plus the zinc. Right? They don't have to be taken at the same time, but I usually do liquid ionic zinc and the bitters. And the bitters can be juice of arugula taken with a meal. It could be, you have them chew a bunch of really bitter greens while they're making their meal. So about 15 minutes before the meal. It could be a formula that you spray under the tongue 15 minutes before the meal, or it could be a tincture that you take. So there's a lot of ways to get bitters in the system to help stimulate the digestion.
Great. Perfect. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Can I ask one more question?
Sure. Of course. Yeah. That's over here.
So I've heard before that the same applies to hormones, where you don't like giving hormones when you want to get your body to make them. And I had a friend asked me about, she's really nervous about taking hormones that her doctor prescribed. Her hormones are extremely low and she's tired of feeling so lousy.
Yeah.
And so I think her doctor prescribed her things like,
are they bioidentical or are they just the standard B that's kind of prescribed stuff that might be synthetic?
It's like micro-ionized progesterone cream.
Okay.
That's topical.
Yep.
And then I'm trying to, my phone's not letting me.
Did they do any testing other than blood testing? Did they do like this Dutch test? They did a Dutch test. Okay, good.
Yeah.
Yeah, good.
And then BIST cream.
Bias cream.
And
Bias cream. It's usually, that's usually estradiol and estriol. And hopefully it's like an 80-20, but depending on what her results were, but usually it's 80% estriol and then 20% estradiol because the estriol is protective.
And it is.
Yeah.
Okay. And then micronized DHEA cream.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, that sounds reasonable. Unless she has a history of breast cancer, then I would be cautious. And then also looking at, does she have, if you're going to increase those estrogens, you want to make sure she doesn't have a high 4-hydroxy, which is the carcinogenic one. And so 4-hydroxyestrone, it's one of the metabolites that you saw in Isabel's, like on that third page. And if that's high, and you're giving them something to increase their estrogen, you also want to protect. So there's nutrients you want to make sure that you're giving with that. And that's where the broccoli sprout powders, DIM sometimes, calcium D-glucarate, that helps to pull those excess estrogens out and make sure she's not drinking coffee, because the same pathway that detoxifies coffee also detoxifies 4-hydroxyestrone.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Yeah. I mean, the fear, there's, real fear because people, there's the nurses study and all these other studies that show that the estrogen replacements can be problematic, but it really, the definitely don't want anybody that, if a doctor tells your patient, your client, that they should take estrogen, but not progesterone with it, my red flag goes up. If they have them taking oral estrogen, my red flag goes up. And if they are taking estrogens E1 and E2 without E3, then my flag goes up. And then a lot of pellets are the worst pellets are just, usually it's just estradiol, I think. And there's no progesterone, there's no anything with it. And they put them in and they're in there for 6 months. So if it's too high a dose, tough, 6 months later, they dissolve, right? And we actually had somebody who was on that and she developed breast cancer. Her levels went so high and she tried to get them, can you remove these things? And so now, you know, we've got 3 months left of trying to get those levels down using herbs and other things to try to, you know, heal her breast cancer. So it's dangerous, right? And they're just doing it because, oh, it's easy just to get in once and it's good levels for 6 months. And it's not. I've seen people with testosterone like that. They got a female who got testosterone pellets. And she was like, it was crazy and her levels went crazy and she was stuck. Couldn't get them out. Right. Yeah. But it can be very helpful. You know, estrogen replacement and all those hormone replacements is very helpful. Some of them can be done over the counter. So like Biomatrix, yes, has a bunch of different, they have and I think I have it here. I'll show you what it looks like. Yeah, they sent me samples. I'm always so lucky they send me samples. But they have this thing called ProAdapt, which is a progesterone. It's an oral. They used to sell this that you can do oral. No, I say it's topical. It says topical, but it used to say oral and the ingredients were the same. But then the FDA started to get really strict on companies that were selling this stuff. So now it says it's topical, but it's basically, it's like in an oil base. And I generally have people, I tell them, you know, the place to do it is topically, you can do it on the wrist, but vulva is even better, right? Because it gets absorbed into the area where you want it to be. And then you can actually, you know, if they're comfortable, I say, call the company and just ask them what they think. Is it dangerous? I took it orally and is that dangerous? They'll probably tell you no. But anyway, I usually just, I err on the side of caution and have people use it topically. So they have one like this. They have one that's by ProEst. This is the progesterone. So the ProAdapt and then there's EstAdapt. That's what it's called. It's EstAdapt. And the EstAdapt is estriol. So if they're way low in their estriol compared to their other two, that's something that can really help. And I've seen it. I've seen people's levels now balance out within a few months of doing that. So, and that's Biomatrix is the company. There's another company called Bezwecken that sells some over the counter stuff. And they, you know, there's topical cream. They used to have estriol inserts, like vaginal inserts. So that's a really nice way for some people, especially if the symptoms and the menopausal symptoms include a lot of vaginal atrophy and dryness. So, and the other trick that Annika Becca started, but then she had to take it off the market. She had a vaginal DHEA and it had a little applicator, like a thing. It was a little tablet and you put it in and you inserted it vaginally and that DHEA would melt, you know, would melt and you'd get DHEA in there. It's the best thing for vaginal dryness and decreased sex drive. But then she was told that it's a drug if you insert it inside. So she had to stop making it. And now she makes her Jolva cream, which has some DHEA and some estriol in it, but it's very specifically on the label. It says for topical use only. It's a cosmetic cream for having a nice vulva. Like, okay. That was really what I was looking for, to have a pretty vulva. Okay. But you can't, I mean, you obviously can use it internally, but you can't tell people that they can, you know. You can say, you know, you can use it at your own risk. And if some of it happens to get in there with those suppositories from Bezwecken, there was one lady I worked with many years ago, probably 8 or 10 years ago. And she had no sex drive. She was dry. And she said her husband was like really frustrated that she hadn't had sex with him in many years. And, you know, was there anything to do? And this was before the Dutch test. And I said, well, there's one thing you can try. I mean, I don't know if it's going to work, but I felt like with her age, you know, it wasn't going to be dangerous to do it because it's estriol, that it's not like a breast cancer stimulator. And so she started doing it. she gets on the phone like a couple of weeks later and she gets on with her husband. And her husband is like, thank you. You gave me back my wife. Thank you. We're buying stock in that company. We don't ever want to run out. So, you know, you just, and it's so great when you can help people, right? And you want to do it safely. You want to do it within your scope. So you have to be careful how you word it. But like we start to not call it lab interpretation. It's just lab review. Let's review your labs, look to see if there's imbalances that might exist, and then share with you some education on what things you might do in your own life to restore balance. That's a nice way to do it, because none of that sounds like practicing medicine without a license. They don't care about imbalances. They don't review anything with you. They just prescribe, diagnose and prescribe, diagnose and prescribe. So as long as you're not using words that might sound like diagnose and prescribe, you're okay for most part.
There's another woman, Tori Hudson, that has a product, and I was looking at it. It was a vaginal suppository for yeast, I think.
Yep.
And I'm looking at it, I'm going, because on the label, it says homeopathic. It's got homeopathic ingredients. And I'm looking at the label going, this isn't homeopathic. It's got Oregon grape and all this great stuff in it. And the doctor just laughed and she said, well, yeah, that's what she did so that she could market it.
So she could market it. Homeopathic, they think, is voodoo medicine, right? Yeah. And anything that says has a hormone in it, even though, you know, it's naturally occurring in nature, hormones are the scope of practice for MDs or nurse practitioners or, you know, physician's assistants. So, I think we have to just keep doing what we're doing. We just have to be careful how we language it, because people need us. They're not getting the support they need. I mean, I know that Shelley knows from firsthand, from being in medicine for so long, you know, as a nurse and seeing all the sometimes like just crazy stuff that's been offered people, and they're not helping. Right. And we want to really help people. So just make sure that you use the right language. And I know a lot of health coaches are being taught at some coaching schools or whatever to, no, you can't read labs. No, you can't do this. No, you can't do that. So you don't say you're reading labs. You're reviewing their labs with them to help them to see if there's any obvious nutritional imbalances there. And that's not the scope of practice for medicine. So you're okay with that. We have to keep helping people. I mean, we do. We do. Anybody else? Questions or comments?
I have a question.
Yeah.
On the Dutch test, I just went to the website and I don't think health coach is even on the list of providers.
So they're not. But the only way you can do it is you contact them and you tell them you're in the NEPT program.
Got it.
Okay. Me, and give them my name.
Okay. All right. Yeah. And the other thing, Dr. Rita Maria, I'm really enjoying the SNPs and just learning more about it. I'm just doing a lot for just trying to learn from just doing it for all my clients. Where would you suggest that I look for more information?
Have you gone through all of the stuff on the consumer side where I have that nutrigenomics and I have like 30 hours worth of interpretation sessions with me interpreting them?
No, where's that?
Okay. I will show you.
Okay. Right.
So I'm going to share my screen. And that's that study I was sharing with Isabel. I'm going to go here. And if you click, when you go into Unstoppable Health, usually it's the same user ID and password. I think you've been in here before. If you click here where, if I click on the main page, because when you go in, I was already in, but if you're not in already, you go to programs and you click on here where it says NEPT. And then on this page, you're going to see a program called Nutrigenomics. And it's got so much. Here is it down under. Here we go. Nutrigenomics. Access now. And it's like loaded with great information. There's all kinds of presentations. There's intro and all that. There's these great interpretation charts. And then there's a couple of extra advanced things. But if you go to interpreting nutrigenomics, there's a link on this page. I'm pretty sure it's on this page that has years and years of me interpreting for people. Where is it? Yeah, number two, interpretation sessions index, learn from recorded interpretation sessions.
Okay.
Yeah. And then you just can go through and play them.
Thank you.
You see it all?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Wow.
Yeah, so 2014 to 18, it's a whole bunch of them. And under each of these is a bunch of people, you know, a bunch of sessions that I did.
Okay.
I think it might just say like JD or various people. There's the video and then, oh, that's all in one?
Mm-hmm.
Really? Woo. Okay, yeah, so there's a lot of them in here. Oh, interpretation sessions, part one. Oh, what happened there? I'll have to go look at that. Anyway, try them out. If you find any links that don't work, let us know.
Okay. Thank you.
Great. Right. And then it's a whole module in the functional interpretation unit on nutrigenomics from a practitioner point of view. Anything else, guys? Oh, and you also have access to, you should, let me see if that's been set up yet. If not, it will be soon. Is on the inemember.com.
What is INE?
INE, Institute of Nutritional Endocrinology. This is the site that you've done all your modules on.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah. Okay. INE stands for Institute of Nutritional Endocrinology. So I have to make sure I go to the right. INE members. INE members. There should be one INE member. Huh. That's members. See, they changed my, this is my password thing and they changed the whole format of it. So I'm going to write in INE, INE member. Here we go. New site, Rita Marie. Okay. Why didn't it do that? There we go. It'll log in. And I think I asked them to put all the Shine recordings in here. Under resources, lab files, clinical pearls. These are cool, these clinical pearls, by the way, because you were saying you finished the modules and we're waiting for the next one to open, which should be very soon. These are all really cool little blurbs that I did. And then there's this thing, like chemistry software, advanced clinical resources. You've got a whole bunch there. It looks like they haven't put up the Shine ones yet, but look at all these cool recordings that you have.
Okay.
Advanced recordings. So you got a lot to look at. I think there might have been, there's one with Ben Lynch in here. That was, I talked about genetics. We're going to start setting up a whole bunch more of those. Anyway, but you'll soon have up here that, you know, my team is working on it, moving it over from the other site, but you'll have access to all the Shine. All the different Shine years, year after year of different stuff. And 2018 is the one I want you to play with because that's the one, that's a whole 3-day workshop on nutrigenomics.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Rita Marie?
Yeah.
A couple of questions. First of all, we're meeting every month to do this lab review. Is that right?
The lab review? Okay. So every month we have a case study call. Okay. Every month we have a open coaching like this, where it's anything goes. Every month we have a content one where we'll talk about specific content and topics and go through modules. And then we have the INE office hours where you can ask anything pretty much like this. And then you have all the other calls for your private, right? For your own personal health.
Okay, got it.
So it's four calls a month.
Quick questions.
Go for it.
I need to take zinc without getting nauseous, no matter what I eat with it.
What brand of zinc and what kind of zinc are you taking?
It's a pill form and I break it in half so that it's it starts off as like 30 and I break it in half to 15. And I know I'm low in zinc, I always have been. So it's just something.
So I would suggest trying some liquid ionic and the ones that are most dilute will probably help the most. So either I would say Premier Research is probably going to be the best bet. And then just start with a couple of drops, and build it up to get to the, to not be, you know, to get the right dose so that you don't get nauseous. You may just have to spread it out throughout the day rather than taking it all at once.
Right. And then I did get a Dutch test that said I had some metabolites, I guess, for a gut infection, because I had been under a lot of stress a couple months ago. And I took Biocidin and Candida Cleanse, because I also had the Candida. But that was for Clostridia, that was the organism that was high.
So, the organic acid test.
Yeah. Oh, that was organic acid. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I did that for a month, but I'm thinking, I feel like I should keep taking the Biocidin. So I ordered more of that. But and the Candida, just to keep going, because I heard you say somewhere to do it for 3 months. But how often should I?
Usually 2 to 3 months. You know, and if it doesn't seem to be getting better, if you're not feeling like the gut symptoms are getting better, are they?
I'm still having migraines, and especially with the fasting. So I've just been taking my medicine and keep going, like just trying to.
Yeah. So you might want to consider if you're not getting better after like 6 weeks to 2 months of that, I would for sure look at doing a stool test to isolate it even further down. And then go into, you know, the gut is a great place to start, obviously, with migraines. So I would go into the site we were just on, the Unstoppable Health site, and then go in there to the gut module, gut repair module, and just start going through that and make sure that you're not missing anything from top down.
Yeah, I've been through that with my other program I was in. Like, I know the top down stuff to do.
But it's a different program though, right? So look to see if there's some things that are a little bit more detailed.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And then, you know, migraines, right? It's looking at the different food categories, right? So salicylates and oxalates and specific sensitivities. You said you've done a food elimination provocation.
No, I haven't done the full.
Okay. You're going to do it. Yeah. You're going to do it with us. We're going to see if we find something, right? So I'm going to start after I finish with this fasting with food, like next week, I'll send out some emails that say, hey, get ready for the elimination. And here's some forms to fill out to kind of identify, because everybody's elimination diet is going to be a little different. Right. And I do it by looking at the frequent foods. You want to create a rare foods diet for yourself, something that a diet that consists of a handful of foods that you don't always eat, not a handful, but a reasonable number that you don't always eat. And, you know, there's some specifics of everybody needs to eliminate these. Mm-hmm. And then there's going to be more based on your frequencies and your forms. And if you go on the site on the, you're not up to that module yet. So if you go on to the Unstoppable Health site and you go on the Empowered Self-Care page. And then, you know, about maybe third of the way or a quarter of the way down, it's going to say, discover your food imbalance or sensitivities, or identify your food sensitivity, something like that. Go through that first part. Everybody can do this. It's preparing for your cleanse, your elimination diet. And there's a lot of little forms and charts and things you can start to be tracking right now to identify some things.
I do know that I didn't get migraines when I was pregnant, and I think that I have a DAO issue. So I wanted to get that checked genetically, because I feel like I don't want to go through all this and then wait all this time to go through all these processes if I could just test that and see if that's what's causing my elevated histamine. I know that the gut infection is probably causing it too. But,
right. And there's certain organisms that are get out of balance. Have you done a 23andMe or any testing?
I sent off for the self-decode.
Mm-hmm. And I haven't done, I signed up for them and I can upload my 23andMe, but I want to see what their actual genes. So when you get that back, bring it to a call so we can all look at it, because I really like to see it. I'm going to ask Annette to come to one and bring the strategy. They have a new one. I just want to see what these genes are. And then when I actually get in there and look at the results from I did one from Apeirion, and they have, so that's three different gene tests that we can look to see, do we have to, in some cases, run multiples, right? Because of the.
I'm wondering, like, which one should I have gotten? I just did that one because it was so inexpensive and there was a sale. So I jumped on it.
Yeah. And they have a lot of good interpretation stuff. So I'd like to see what's in that report.
Yeah. planning on thinking of doing it anyway, but I haven't gotten the kit yet, so I'm chomping at
it. It takes a good 4 to 6 weeks before they get it back to you.
I mean, I haven't gotten the initial kit
delivered. Oh, right. Oh, so once you get the kit and send it back, then it's another 4 to 6 weeks because it's, yeah. At least that's what it is with 23andMe, and that's what it was for this other test I did.
And that seems to be helping when I do it.
What's that?
The histamine block pills, the DAO pills.
The DAO. Have you found one that isn't loaded with crap like talc? And I just have been concerned with those.
I think
there's like one manufacturer that makes it for everybody, because even Seeking Health, which is a really pure brand, theirs had the talc in it. It looks like the same. What's the other thing that helps with that is quercetin. I don't know if you do quercetin.
Yeah, I have that dehist. Have you heard of that? That has the quercetin in it and the nettles.
Mm-hmm. We'll look to see how much it has, because I just went to getting powdered quercetin. And anytime I feel anything like, oh, this kid next to me, that kid has a cold, I'm taking my quercetin, because it helps like immediately bring down the histamine response very quickly.
I'm also doing the nigella seeds. I'm doing a bunch of stuff, moringa. But this doesn't have talc in it. It says,
what brand is it?
Seeking Health.
Really? They might have changed the formula. And it's called, what is it called? Is it just DAO or?
Block. It's got DAO and vitamin C.
What's it called?
Histamine block.
Histamine block from Seeking Health. Oh, yay. Maybe it's new and I haven't seen it yet.
Cellulose in it. And
Seeking Histamine. They used to have one, I don't know if they still do, that was just DAO, and it was just like everybody else's, which was garbagey. Seeking Health, histamine block, let's see.
And I'm taking their probiotic as well, because I found out that the lactobacillus stimulates histamine as well.
You know, reach out, I don't know how responsive she would be, because you know she's really busy right now, but Steph knows the organisms, like, you know, she knows which ones eat what. Uh-huh. And which ones you can increase to help decrease histamines or decrease oxalates or whatever. Let's see. This is expensive stuff, eh?
Yeah. That's why I'm like, do I have to keep repeating these? Because I feel better. So I don't really want to have to keep taking the biocidin.
It's shellac. If you look at the other ingredients, it's got cellulose, but basically it's got sucrose, rice starch, shellac, hydroxypropylene cellulose, cross bovidine, hydrated magnesium silicate, sodium. Yeah, that's why I haven't ever done any of these. I try really hard to just make it happen with the quercetin. And if it's going to be the only thing that helps, then do it, right? It's better than taking a pharmaceutical.
I just don't see it on here, so I'm wondering.
It doesn't say under other ingredients?
It just says microcrystalline cellulose.
Let me share my...
I believe you.
Screen. But I want to, it looks like a different shape bottle.
Yeah.
Let's see. Okay. What happened here? Okay. So he assists histamine. Where was I? Let's go here. Histamine block. Oh, the other site was $79. This looks more like what you have.
Yep. I got it. All right. I didn't get it.
You didn't get it off label.
I can't believe the price.
Oh, no, look at that. That's other ingredients, cellulose, capsule, and ascorbyl palmitate. Okay, great. This other one, let me see if I can still have it open.
An old version or something.
I don't know, but it was on this other, let's go back to this sheet. Okay, so it was Seeking Health. Unless I clicked on this one. And maybe Seeking Health histamine block. It looks different, doesn't it? $79, $75 compared to $29 on your site. And look at this. Other ingredients. Cellulose, sucrose, rice starch, shellac. Yeah. What a difference.
Yeah, and the bottle's a lot different.
Yeah, I wonder if you got the newer one and this is an old one and these guys still have.
I think so. A lot of people buy stuff up and then they're waiting for shortages and then they
And then, yep. Well, that's cool that you can get it for only $29 at Seeking Health and it doesn't have the crap in it. This is good to know. This is very good to know.
I'm really curious about all the other factors, but it gets to be when you're trying to eliminate everything, then you don't really know what did what. So,
right. That's why we're going to do the very systematic elimination diet together. All right. All right. Well, if there's no other questions, I will. Hi, Stephanie.
Hi. I just thought of a couple of questions, actually. So I'm working on my digestion, and from what I can tell so far, I have the signs of low stomach acid, and I'm digesting very slowly.
Mm-hmm.
So when I don't eat, like I've been doing a lot of fasting since the summer, and when I don't eat, I feel great.
Yeah.
So I've been intermittent fasting, and right now, like I'm playing with different windows. Right now I'm doing an 18-6, I think, window. Wow. I cannot eat. I can go, like, once I start eating, then my appetite comes up, but like, I'm not hungry for breakfast. I do it pretty easily, but I'm wondering if maybe I should open it up, because I'm having a little bit of a dilemma between, it feels really good to fast, but then it feels like in order to get enough calories, I have to eat pretty big meals.
Too much, and then it's overtaxing.
And then it sits. So, yeah. So should I open up that window and be fasting less and eating less at each meal?
I think it's something to experiment with for sure, right? We don't really know, you know, without experimenting. I always think of our bodies as labs, which is why we called our new memberships all labs, because we want people to experiment on themselves. So the other thing I would ask is when you, what are the symptoms that you get when you start to eat again?
Bloating is the big one. Bloating, and then depending, I'm glad we're doing an elimination diet, because I've been wanting to do that, because I know nuts are not working for me. When I eat nuts, it's just everything goes haywire. But I seem to bloat with just about everything. So
and it doesn't matter what the amount is. So, you know, because this is a good
I think it does matter.
So what I would do is try, instead of trying to open up your window, first thing to try would be to have small amounts and just eat it, like eat 3-4 times in that window. Cause it, I mean, six hours, it's hard to eat more than once or twice. Right.
Yeah.
So just go and eat small amount. And then an hour, 2 hours later, have a little bit more. I mean, if you find yourself losing weight and it's not good, then you can bump up the amounts. But I would look at that. I would make sure that you're taking digestive enzymes with each meal. And bitters?
I am. Yeah.
Okay. Bitters. And you're having adequate zinc in your diet?
Yes. I'm taking ionic zinc right now. Also.
Okay. So you're doing the things that you need to do for that. Are you sitting down and quietly like doing all that stuff before eating?
Yeah. That's in process, because it's funny. I'll have taken a few bites of food and then I'm like, Oh God, I forgot.
You
know, but I've actually been doing like the mini vacations. I've been loving that. I've been doing that throughout the day. And I feel just over the course of my day, I feel so much calmer now. So I'm definitely just generally less harried and running around.
So the thing, you know, I think about when, you know, there's bloating and it's almost immediately and it's with everything is SIBO type of situation. And a lot of people, you know, it could be the organisms are in the wrong place. Do you take probiotics?
I haven't recently, no. And I was wondering actually which I should take.
Given what you just told me, I would recommend Bifidobacter and then D-lactate-free formulation.
D-lactate-free.
And this is just off the top of my head without looking at anything, but those are, because it's the lactate in the lactate forming organisms that produce the gas and, you know, methane gas or hydrogen gas, whatever it might be. But the other thing you want to look at is your motility, right? And if it's slow. So there's actually a supplement from Pure Encapsulation called Motil Pro, and it stimulates the migrating motor complex, which moves things along in there. I know from a pharmaceutical, a lot of doctors will prescribe like low dose naltrexone for that. But there's Trafala, which is an herb that helps to improve the motility.
Oh, I have that. And I was taking it. I stopped taking it and I just started taking it again.
Great. Yeah. I mean, then look at the Moto Pro. There's an experimentation going, right? You have to do that. But the Moto Pro, Pure Encapsulations.
Pure Encapsulations.
Okay. Yeah. And the Moto Pro has some ginger in it, which is a stimulant for that. But it also has a little bit of 5-HTP, which produces serotonin. And if you're low in serotonin, you can have low motility.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's worth trying.
Okay, because yeah, it does seem like I have that.
That and then the D-lactate free and the bifidobacter for probiotics.
Okay, because usually with the probiotics, there's like a ton of stuff in there. So just make sure that there's a bifidobacter in there or a bunch of them and then it doesn't matter.
No, you do not want a bunch of other stuff in there.
So I just want.
You just want bifidobacter. And then another one, which I only know of two companies that make is Claire or Custom Probiotics. It's called D-lactate free. And it's got some bifido, small amount, but it has four different strains of lacto that don't produce the lactate.
Okay.
They won't produce the acid and they won't cause the methane production. So those are the only safe ones if you think you might have SIBO as you're working through it.
All right, so just the bifido. I just want something
just bifido, and then you could start with just bifido, and then you can expand it to the other. Now, the other way you can get, if you feel like you need other organisms, is through an enema. You can do an enema or suppositories. So you can actually buy on Amazon these little suppository molds, and then you can melt cocoa butter and mix it with your probiotic, and then you can do pretty much anything that you think you might need. And that's where doing a stool test comes in, because then it'll give you an idea of what you need. And then you can actually insert it into the rectum and let it melt in there and get to where it's going to go. So that's what I recommend for SIBO, getting probiotics with SIBO.
Okay, great. So the other thing I was just wondering, just curious, because I've also been drinking, blending greens, right? I've been doing green water, usually greens and lemon or that's pretty much usually it. And since I'm doing the fasting, would that be considered something that would break the fast? Because it's easiest for me probably to have it in the morning. I've tried to maybe have it in my window in the afternoon, but sometimes I forget to make it or I eat and then I'm not.
I would try it and see how it does for you, because it may just give you a lot of extra nutrition without loading your digestive tract.
Yeah. Would it be a break of my fast?
Kind of, sort of, but it's right. Grasping at straws. Like, is it going to impact your ketosis? Is it probably not, right? Check it and see. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I guess I could do that. I was thinking about buying the Keto Mojo, but that might be a reason to do it and play with it.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Great. Thank you.
Yeah. You're welcome.
So Dr. Rita Marie is here. Two more things too. Yeah. You just recommended she take a digestive enzyme. But earlier in the call, you said you don't recommend it. You recommend the bitters. So
no, I don't recommend HCL. Yeah, but digestive enzymes for sure. Yeah.
Okay, different. And when would you give somebody pregnenolone supplement? Or would you?
Yeah, I've done that. And oftentimes it's when I look at their Dutch test and I see that their adrenals are low, their sex hormones are low. Everything's low. And so I want to give them pregnenolone instead of giving them things that are like specific, like estrogen, progesterone, DHEA, I'm giving them the precursor, but sometimes I give it both. It just depends on the results. So oftentimes, like if they're in a stage one adrenal fatigue, right? And I'm seeing that their sex hormones are low, but they're in a stage one, which means their cortisols are really high. Then I look at giving them fairly low doses of pregnenolone, like maybe, liquid 10 drops twice a day. If they have low cortisol and low sex hormones, then I would be looking at giving them a higher dose, maybe 15 drops three times a day. So it just depends, because the pregnenolone in a person who's in that type, that stage one adrenal, which is like hyper, everything's hyper. If you give them more pregnenolone, they're probably going to make more cortisol. It's not going to go down the other pathways. So I'm really careful with that. I will give them a little, so in the hopes that some of it filters down into the, and you see me doing all this stuff, it's because I'm picturing the flowchart in my brain. That's why I'm not just wacky. By picture flowcharts in my brain.
Oh. What was the last one you said? What was low and what was high?
So if the sex hormones are low and the adrenals are high, I'm careful with pregnenolone. I will give sometimes, depends on, I have to look at the whole thing, but I will recommend it sometimes, but smaller amounts, like maybe, you know, 8 to 10 drops twice a day versus 15 drops 3 times a day. And then if they are all low, sex hormones and cortisol, then it's, you know, you can do higher doses like 15. Pregnenolone, you got to be careful about taking close to bedtime because it sometimes can interfere with GABA and then cause the person to stay awake.
Okay, perfect. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Who else? Any other questions?
I wanted to ask you, if you don't mind, I have the same Seeking Health Probiota Histaminex. It might be easier just for you to look at it.
Histaminex? Okay, let's look.
Yeah. And I'm wondering, like, how do you know if you have SIBO versus just a basic gut infection, you know?
There's certain signs. There's a test. If you go to that RGI page, there's actually a test for, a paper pen test, you know, get a score for that. And then symptoms, right? If you feel like really bloaty after a meal, very bloaty shortly after a meal, no matter what you eat, that's oftentimes a SIBO. If sauerkraut or taking probiotics makes your bloating worse, that's an indication it might be SIBO. Let me go to the Seeking Health site again. Okay, so what were we looking for? Histaminex?
Yes. Probiota, it's called Probiota Histaminex.
There we go, 60, Probiota Histaminex, okay. So it's got all the bifido. This is the one I was saying. They don't call it that, but it's a D-lactate free. Okay, so this would be a good one. Yeah.
Okay, that's what I have. Cool.
Yep. That's good. Yep.
Okay. So I can find that checklist for ruling out SIBO in the digestive.
I think it's in the gut repair program on the regular site. Okay. There's a section, I think it's part 3, and there's a section on SIBO and FODMAPs and things like that. Part 3 or 4. I don't remember which. It's the one that says special implementations or special stuff.
Okay, cool. Thank you.
Okay. You're welcome. Who else? Questions, comments? Last chance. I'm going to go eat dinner.
Enjoy.
Thank you. Yeah, it's been one of those days with lots of brain power required from the early morning. So I need to just, like, okay. All right, guys, take care.